Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the very first day of April 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And then a bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the cash grain segment with the folks at the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. Along the way, I'll update you on the agricultural news for the day, and we'll check the weather forecast too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible, right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, futures finished the day higher. Nearby Maghorn up 2.5 cents at $3.54. July, 3.57¾, two higher. In December, $3.69¾, up a penny for the day. March finished a penny and a quarter higher at $3.79½. Soy complex, May beans up 7½ at $9.18¼. July, $9.26, 8¼ higher. August up 8. September, 7¾ higher. And November beans, $9.32¼. The settlement price for the new crop up 7½ cents in the bean pit. January soybeans 8 higher at $9.36½. Soybean meal at $2.72.30, up 20 cents, or rather up $2. Bean oil in the May at $34.45, up 23 cents. Wheat futures May contract 2¼ higher, $4.75¾. The settlement July at $4.83, up 2¼, and the hard red July, $4.88½, up 1½ cents. Live cattle futures from Chicago, April contract 7½ higher at 133, June at 123.50, 52½ cents lower. April feeders at $155.75, $1.32½ lower, and the May contract at $154.25, down a buck. Lean hogs April contract 55 cents lower at this hour, $67.80. May futures $75.70, down $1.52½. Don't forget to stay with us throughout the whole hour today. We'll have Commodity Week on most of these radio stations coming up just after our closing market report. And you can always hear it online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week, it takes a look back at what happened in the world of agriculture. And this week, especially the USDA grain stocks and acreage reports.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
For the Illinois State Water Survey, this is state climatologist Jim Angel. March temperatures were 5.2 degrees above normal, making it the 10th warmest March on record. Precipitation was 3.3 inches in Illinois, that's 0.3 inches above average. However, it was unevenly distributed across the state. Southern Illinois had amounts in the neighborhood of 4 to 8 inches. Meanwhile, some areas from Quincy eastward and near St. Louis received only 1 to 3 inches. The Water Survey Soil Temperature Network of 19 sites has 2-inch soil temperatures ranging from the low 50s in the north to the upper 50s in the south. The National Weather Service released their new monthly outlook this week for April. Most of the state has an increased chance of being both warmer and drier than normal for the month. In the shorter term, the forecast for this weekend is for highs on Saturday to range from the 40s in the north to the 60s in the south. Sunday will be warmer with highs in the 60s across the state. Cooler conditions will prevail next week with the highs in the 40s in the north, in the 50s in central Illinois, and in the 50s and 60s in southern Illinois. Lows Sunday night will be in the 20s and low 30s across the state. Lows on Monday will be a little warmer. Lows will be below freezing again on Tuesday morning. There is a chance of rain about midweek, but rain amounts are expected to be less than half an inch. This is Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this very first day of April 2016. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. A gray day here. How about where you are, Mike?
Well, it got a little bit cool and rainy here, Todd.
Well, I think we're going to get cooler and rainy here, too. Well, that according to Eric Snodgrass. We'll hear from him at the bottom of the half hour, but looks like that's what it's going to be for quite a while. Hey, the other thing we probably ought to talk about are yesterday's numbers from the USDA, the grain stocks, and in particular the prospective plantings report. That showed a really big number for corn. However, corn only lost 15 cents yesterday, and on the second day of this event, it finished higher. That seems like really good news.
Yeah, and you know, we also saw the May corn hold that 346 and a half low from last August, and that was on the monthly chart, and that was a big deal to me technically, Todd, especially given how much above the highest trade guess this acreage number was, roughly 2.5 million acres above the highest number. And I think this goes in line with what we've been talking about when it comes to the wheat and when it comes to the corn. If the trade is going to believe and bite into the apple that the corn acreage number is 93.6 million, they're going to have to bite into the same apple that the wheat number is below 50 million, and that we do have some significant issues going on in the hard red wheat belt, meaning a freeze from a couple weeks ago, the dryness that we continue to be under both in eastern Kansas and central and western Kansas, and then the upcoming 10-day models would suggest colder and drier for west of the Mississippi, and wetter and colder for east of the Mississippi. So when you wrap the acreage report in to all the things that are going on right now, I think the trade realized that if the wheat doesn't want to go down and the beans don't want to go down, the corn is not likely to go down. And I think this goes back to some of the spread trades, especially that bean-corn ratio.
Yeah, so the other things I think that we probably ought to bring into this picture, because it's been a really bearish week for corn. However, to end Friday up 2.5 cents seems, again, like a real relief, because you had the Chinese saying, well, we're going to open our corn stockpile, which has been there for 10 years or something like that. We'll do that in October. The Brazilians said something similar, although I didn't realize they had that. I have that in the newscast for the day. And you had yesterday's USDA reports. It just seemed like it was pile on to the bearish side, and 15 cents was the best it could do.
And I think this goes back to the fact that at the end of February, when the USDA did this survey for acreage, the bean-corn ratio was 2.3. Today, after the close, we broke through 2.5 and hit the highest levels since August of 2014. Now, recall back during that time of August 2014, that's when we were trading and getting into our mindset the idea that the bean carryover in the United States was going below 100 million bushels, and that was the same time period we started to see $4 and $5 positive basis in the soybeans. And so this gives you an idea of how stretched that rubber band in terms of the ratio is at this point, Todd. We're at levels now in that bean-corn ratio that we haven't seen since the beans are premium 2.5 times the corn since that time period of 100 million bushel bean carryover. And that's the future side of it. If you look at the Central Illinois price, say at the Andersons on their website today, you had 907 cash beans for fall and 345 cash corn for fall. That's a ratio of 2.63. And so you've even got a higher ratio. You're talking about that ratio being about 15% higher now than it was when USDA took that survey. I can tell you from my desk here today, it's been one of the busiest days I've had in phone conversations, and the lion's share of it was talking to producers about shifting corn acres into beans and how to hedge that. And so I really sincerely feel like that maybe the USDA could pull a rabbit out of the hat with the yield number, but I think this 93.6 is going to be the top end for the corn acreage number.
Primarily, where are those acres shifting? Are they out west in marginal areas or someplace else?
This is where it's a real problematic statistically. If you look at the USDA NAS map that they put out yesterday, only Ohio and Wisconsin showed no changes in corn acres versus last year. Every other Corn Belt state, every Delta state, every Plain state, except Montana, showed an acreage increase in corn. Here in Kansas, for instance, we were looking at 650,000 more acres of corn at the expense of 700,000 acres of wheat and 250,000 acres of sorghum. I doubt very seriously if that's going to end up being the truth because of how dry we are. If we don't get enough rain in April, I think we will see producers move back into beans pretty rapidly, especially given the prices. And in your state of Illinois, 400,000 acres more of corn and 200,000 acres of beans. I talked to a very strong, good district sales manager for a seed corn company, looked at some of the websites and the last profit loss statements that some of the larger seed companies put up. I don't think anybody was expecting this kind of corn seed number based upon sales at this stage of the game.
All right. So on the soybeans, when you talk to producers about making this switch, are you also having them go ahead and pull the trigger on sales if this is what they believe they need to do?
Yes. Early high in beans seems likely. Early low in corn seems likely. If the beans want to go higher and break through 935, 940, which we got to 934 today on a high, if we close above that, we could stretch our legs, I think, to the 950 to 970 level. That's where I will do another increment of recommendations. But if they are moving into more bean acres, we will be hedging those during the month of April as this spread and this ratio extends the elasticity, with the idea that we can at least cover some cost of production and add a little bit back in terms of profitability. But the way this market is setting itself up, if beans want to go higher than 960, 970, I think it really has to be all hands on deck. Wheat, corn, and beans all go up together, and the investment funds are coming back in. So that's where I'm kind of hedging a hedge. If I'm wrong by hedging beans at the 970 area and we keep on going higher, that's fine. I've got plenty of corn that I need to hedge as well.
And then for old crop soybeans, do you want them to go ahead and finish making sales?
Yeah, I think this is a good time to get into the new crop, or excuse me, the old crop sales, because July beans did clear 925 on a closing basis. I do think you have substantial South American crop coming online. I am still worried about the political fallout of the government of Brazil being taken out, essentially, and that's still very much a live wire. There's talk on the Financial Times today that that could come as early as this month, and so I did get in contact with some Brazilian colleagues through Chicago, and it does seem as though they too are worried about the state of Brazil and the weakening of the Brazilian currency to where it becomes more of a competitive factor to the United States at pretty much the wrong time. So, yeah, old crop beans, now that we're above 925 in July, time to start scale-up selling there as well.
I haven't asked this question yet, but why were beans up 7 to 8 cents today?
I think it goes back to the spread. Once we took out, you know, keep in mind, we had a very hard time getting above the 2.44 level. We had not been above that level, 2.4 to 2.44, since October of 2014. Once we shot through that yesterday, it really opened the door up all the way to, say, 2.55, 2.56, and essentially 2.58 is the ultimate high from July of 2014. And so I think it was mostly technically oriented. Now, at the end of the day, with the midday models turning colder and turning wetter for the eastern Corn Belt, I think there was some short covering in the corn with the idea that Monday's crop progress numbers but in the Delta states, and then what these 10-day weather models will say, because we're getting into mid-April now on day 8, 9, and 10. If they stay cool and wet, it really promotes the idea that it's going to be very difficult to get 93.6 million acres in the Corn Belt. That would say you have to get planting in a large percentage of the Corn Belt by mid-April.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzalone. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A good reminder from him there at the end that the crop progress reports for the growing season kick off starting Monday from the United States Department of Agriculture. Do recall that on Tuesday, every Tuesday during the growing season, you get to hear from the state statisticians, usually from Illinois, Indiana, Iowa and Minnesota, depending on the week. Some of them are not there yet, and depending on the week, especially early in the season, certainly some of them may not be there, but we'll have those state statisticians for you next Tuesday. The crop progress reports are released at 3 o'clock Central Time. You can always check out our Twitter feed at Commodity Week or at WillAg_org, either one, if you'd like to see what those numbers look like just about the same time that they are released. In today's agricultural news, Congress returns from spring recess next week. That hostile political climate, with little room for any legislative work before the summer presidential conventions. However, America's largest farm group is not giving up on getting Congress to pass more bills, including spending measures, limits on federal agency overregulation, and a stalled GMO food labeling bill when Congress returns to the Hill. Farm Bureau's executive director Dale Moore concedes, though, some action may have to wait in favor of planting political seeds this year to spur further action.
Kind of taking advantage, if you will, of this being an election year, being a presidential election year, getting some of those kinds of issues out on the table so that members, while they may not act on them this year, something that Congress, you know, can have in the back of their mind, hopefully even farther toward the front of their mind. What are we going to be looking at next year?
Moore seems to agree with Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley that it will be very tough to resurrect a voluntary GMO food labeling bill that stalled out in the Senate in the last month.
I worked on the House side when I worked up on Capitol Hill, but familiar enough with the way the Senate thinks and operates, doesn't matter who's in the majority. If you have a cloture vote that's a dozen votes short, that's a pretty steep mountain to climb up to get to that 60 number. And I think there's a lot of truth in what Senator Grassley pointed out.
Grassley predicted recently Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is unlikely to bring up the voluntary labeling bill again unless there is a possibility it could get to the needed 60 votes. Moore says he cannot imagine a further compromise that would win back the 7 Republicans who voted against the bill and also receive support from at least 5 Democrats for the voluntary labeling measure. Let's move from Washington, D.C. and we'll hopscotch across the globe. Chinese pork imports could reach a record of more than 1 million metric tons this year for the country that consumes around half of the global pork supplies. The new prediction by industry leaders marks a 28% increase in pork imports into China. Reuters reports the increase will challenge Japan's status as the top importer of pork for the first time. The export business is expected to benefit countries like the United States, Germany, and Brazil. Millions of small farms in China are exiting the industry. That's one of the reasons for the big import number. China's pork industry regularly experiences boom and bust periods, with small farmers who account for half of the country's 54 million metric tons of annual output traditionally are quick to respond to any price changes. And finally, today we'll move from China to Brazil. Brazil's government announced this week it will sell public corn stocks and proposed lowering import taxes on grain. Pro Farmers First Thing Today reports the announcement comes as an attempt to ease prices that have climbed near record levels for corn, squeezing the livestock sector. Brazil will sell 160,000 metric tons of corn from government stockpiles at local market prices to small livestock producers focusing on the northeast and southern areas of the country. Brazil's agriculture minister proposed ending the import taxes on corn shipments, which traders estimate could cut import prices by about 10%. Meanwhile, the pork and poultry sectors say they have booked some 500,000 metric tons in corn imports from Argentina and Paraguay for April through May delivery. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, terminating a cover crop. You know, it's not as easy as you might think. Before producers can start planting corn or soybeans, they need to terminate the cover crops in their fields. Kevin Bradley is a University of Missouri Extension weed specialist, and he's done a lot of research on killing out different types of cover crops. He says timeliness. Timeliness is the key to killing a cover crop, and the earlier, the better.
they're going to start kind of busting out here with this weather we're having and really start to take off and get a lot of growth on them. So we need to get in there early and burn those down.
Bradley says if producers do not get effective control of cover crops, they can become weeds in a sense, because they can impact corn and soybean yields.
Something like a ryegrass greens back up, that is going to take nutrients and water away from the crop that we want.
Again, that was Kevin Bradley. He's of University of Missouri Extension, a weed scientist there. If you'd like to learn more about cover crops in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, you can do that on the University of Illinois Bulletin website. Aaron Hager has posted an article there about terminating cover crops. You can find it at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Andy Schaefer joins us now. He's at the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility in the northwestern part of that state. Thanks, Andy, for being with us today.
Good to hear be here, Tom.
Well, tell me a little bit about your response to yesterday's numbers and what you think of the response in Chicago. Not too bad, I would guess.
Well, it's a big this is a big corn number, that's for sure, and I don't think I think the bean number, what's interesting, the bean number was a little lower, but I think after you know, looking at this corn bean ratio now, when the price of soybeans versus corn, I think we are going to start planting some more beans. So I think the numbers that the government gave us are not going to be accurate. We continue to hear some producers in our backyard talk about planting some more beans because they have some swing acres that they can switch to beans, and at this price relationship, I think we're going to start to see some of that.
In the northern two-thirds of Illinois, I would think that would be highly unusual for swing acres to be available, especially if they have a really good fall where they can put nitrogen on. Is that unusual in your area?
No, not so much. It seems like guys out here will adapt a little bit more to price sensitivity, and I think, you know, they don't have the... And a lot of these guys have been heavy corn so much where throwing a field of beans will actually help their rotation. So I think they'll adjust a little bit out here.
And I guess my thought here was they haven't already put the fertilizer on?
Yeah, some of the nitrogen has not been, no nitrogen or chemical has been applied yet. So, any nitrogen for the spring hasn't been applied, so that field could very easily go to beans. But keep in mind, that's not everybody. I mean, there is a lot of people that have already committed to acres, but like I said, there is some acres that could be considered swing acres to go one way or the other still to this day.
So the switch is on. Let's go back to what's happening there at the elevator. What's basis like today?
Basis is cheap on beans. We're 71 under the May here for new old crop beans. It's about an 847 cash price. New crop is still, you know, 867, 65 under basis, and you know, above 850, we've been buying some new crop beans.
Surprisingly enough. And your bids for corn today?
Corn, our old crop corn cash bid is 32 under. That puts us at about a 322 cash price, and our fall basis is 45 under, and that has not changed for months, and that puts our cash price at 325, and at 325 for new crop corn, nobody has interest in that at all.
Hey, thanks so much. That is Andy Schaefer.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's April Fool's Day. Among the great pranks, in 1957, the BBC TV show Panorama showed the Swiss harvesting spaghetti from trees. Evidently, the dreaded spaghetti weevil had been eradicated, making for a bountiful harvest. And in 1998, Burger King ran an ad in USA Today, introducing the left-handed Whopper. the condiment stripped out only on the right side. Customers requested not only the new left-handed burgers, but also the old right-handed model as well. On this day in agricultural history in 1582, France adopted the new Gregorian calendar. Prior to that, the new year was celebrated in France on April 1st. In 1875, Sir Francis Galton published the first newspaper weather map in the Times, London, England. In 1893, the first dishwashing machine became an award-winning success at the Columbian Exposition. The model was originally patented by Josephine Cochran, whose company eventually evolved into KitchenAid. In 1911, Seaman Ashel Knapp died, an American agriculturalist. He began the system which evolved into the U.S. Cooperative Extension Service. He introduced improved methods of farming into Louisiana, spurred the development of rice culture in the Southwest, demonstrated methods for curbing the boll weevil in Texas, and inaugurated a federal program of farm demonstrations throughout the South. And in 1960, Tyros-1, the first weather observation satellite, was launched from Cape Kennedy. It sent the first television pictures back from outer space. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. We're joined now by Eric Snodgrass of Agrible. Thanks for being with us, Eric. Lots to cover today. Let's start with the storms we had earlier in the week across the Midwest and the Delta. Tell me about them.
Yeah, certainly an active weather pattern this week. We got hammered pretty hard on Wednesday and then again on Thursday with some stronger storms. It's kind of nice to hear some lightning and thunder. I just kind of like that stuff. But we had some nastier storms kind of south of Champaign. Got some hail a couple counties south of here. But the big news has been what's happened after this, right? The temperatures in the last 24 hours have dropped around here about 24 degrees. So that's a pretty big temperature drop, and we're going to struggle to get into the 50s, especially with these strong northwest winds. I mean, they're coming in right now, gusting at 35 miles an hour. And what this all means is that we've had a shift in our weather patterns. You know, March has been warm, and now we had our first big cold front come through and try to drop our temperatures off. And so around here on Friday night into Saturday morning, and maybe even again on Sunday morning, there's a pretty good chance of seeing some below freezing temperatures. And I'm not talking, you know, down in the teens, but, you know, maybe in the upper 20s, low 30s certainly. And that, those cold temperatures actually stretch across a big chunk of the Great Plains for at least Saturday morning as well. You know, and as you get into the weekend, we got a couple of shots here of some more colder air and certainly some windier conditions. Both Saturday and Sunday have these very fast-moving, weak low-pressure systems that kind of come out of southern Canada, cut across, you know, Minnesota and parts of Wisconsin and go toward Michigan. Definitely going to spread some snow showers across those areas, but we're going to be on the southern side of that, which means we're looking at another couple of days of some pretty ferocious winds, especially on Saturday. What it all says to me is that we've got a shift going into the first week of April, something we've been watching for a while. So that's the first real deviation in temperatures we've seen for quite some time.
So if we have the cold weather, does somebody else have warmer weather?
Yeah, that's certainly how it works in, you know, the winter and spring months. And it's kind of neat. Right now, or at least yesterday, I should say, in Alaska, there's this one location, I think you pronounce it Klawok, which is an airport in southeastern Alaska. They hit 71 degrees. Now, that is the new all-time highest temperature set in March for the whole state. And the way the flow across this part of the world works, when you've got warmth building over Alaska and Western Canada, if it's wintertime or springtime, that usually means that the cooler air is being displaced and pushed to the south and east, which is basically the east coast of the U.S. So we're going to settle into the regime here where it's going to be cooler than average across the eastern half of the country, you know, for this first week of April. You know, thankfully that it's April. That means that, you know, our temperatures are going to be, you know, when I say cool, I'm talking highs in the 50s rather than highs in the 60s. But still, it's a shift from what we've been seeing. So, yep, that warm air pushed into Alaska, makes a hard cut to the south, where we have cold air over the eastern half of the country. Yep, good thing to observe there.
Yeah, cool, wet. Delta's been really wet. Any place been really dry?
Yeah, the Delta's been hammered, and they're trying to plant down there and get the crop going, and they keep getting rainstorm after rainstorm. But you go to the central Great Plains, it's actually been quite dry. They're now starting to show up on the drought monitor as abnormally dry. Something to think about, given the wheat production there, and as they get ready to plant for the 2016 season for other row crops, you know, corn and beans. But when you want to talk really dry, let's head to Phoenix real quick as we wrap this up. It hasn't rained in Phoenix since January. Now, I know Phoenix is near a desert, but this is the wet time of year for them, but they have not seen precip there since January. So there you go. That's kind of our quick tour around the U.S.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Snodgrass joins us here on Agricultural Programming from Illinois Public Media.